the Indiana School of the Sky Science Series.
Great Days in Science, the story of man's mastery of his own mind.
Welcome to another chapter in Great Days in Science, the Indiana School of the Sky Science Series, broadcast each week at this time to students and their friends. Produced by Indiana University with the cooperation of the Indiana State Department of Education and this radio station, this series reenacts and recreates Great Days in Science. Today, the story of one of the greatest scientific minds of our century, a program entitled Einstein Looks for a New Answer.
Everything, we say, has a beginning. Nations have beginnings. Thoughts have beginnings. For a few minutes, let's try to find the beginnings of a certain idea in science. Let's try to find the beginnings of an idea that finally, only a few years ago, cracked the atom and released the greatest force the world has ever known.
The remote beginnings of this idea are hard to find. We could go back to Democritus among the ancient Greeks. Or starting later in time, we could touch on the works of Galileo and Newton and Dalton. Or still later, we could call the names of Faraday and Maxwell. But not for now.
We look at these beginnings no farther back in time than the school days of our own grandfathers. We go back to the school days of Albert Einstein. Today, he's a rather old man, living quietly and simply at Princeton University. But in 1895, he was a boy of 16. Let's imagine now a scene that takes place in a little town in Switzerland. School is out and the boys are running and laughing, as boys will always do, calling to one another, pushing and punching, all but one. All but Albert Einstein. Slowly, he makes his way along, head bent, thinking. Not dreaming, no. Thinking. Thinking carefully. Thinking to a purpose.
Yes. Yes, that's the problem. The speed of light. Always the same. Not even the whirling of the earth can change it. Those Americans proved it. Michelson and Morley, back in 1887. So the speed of light must be a constant everywhere. Never changing. It must be. Here on the earth, and on the sun, and out in space among the stars. The speed of light never changes, even though other things do. Moving, motion, that has to be considered too. Motion is somehow related to the problem of light. Somehow. There must be an answer. There must be. Maybe what Lorentz says is really true.
Albert!
What? What? Oh, Herr Professor.
Excuse me, I...
Albert, what shall we do with you?
Oh, I'm sorry, Herr Professor. If I've done anything,
No, that's the point, my boy. You weren't doing anything. Or will you?
Oh, yes. I was thinking, of course.
That I can believe, Albert.
Thank you.
Any other boy, I'd suspect him of scheming some devilment. And you were thinking about what?
The Michelson-Morley experiments with light and the new theories of Lorentz.
Oh, but if that's what troubles you, why haven't you come to me?
Oh, I didn't want to bother you, Herr Professor. Besides, I like to puzzle things out for myself.
I can believe it. Of course, you know that Fitzgerald and Lorentz have already solved that problem.
Oh, no.
Huh?
Excuse me, Herr Professor, but I hardly think so.
So?
I may be wrong,
well, that is possible.
But by the law of coordinates and calculus, it is not possible to use the same formula in two different situations. Here is what bothers me, Professor. Michelson points out...
That was in 1895, and Albert Einstein was only 16 years old. Even then, his mind insisted on order and neatness, and a problem in physics that could not be explained was disorderly and untidy. But the answer, or a part of it, was yet to come. In 10 years, he would find it. Meanwhile, there was more schooling at the Polytechnic Institute in Zurich. Days and nights of puzzled thinking, hours of studying the experiments of older and more experienced scientists. Then graduation, and finally a post in the Swiss Patent Office in Bern. Yet, though he gave his days to the patent office, his nights were free. Free for him to work on questions that had troubled him since his school days. Slowly, the answer he was searching for began to show itself.
The trouble is that we keep thinking of time and space and motion in terms of our everyday lives. But how can the motions we see every day apply to light, which is the fastest thing in all the universe? How can the space we know here on Earth apply to space among the stars? And how can time, as we know it, apply to things so small as atoms and electrons?
Yes, in those long nights, the problems began to resolve themselves into a clear system of mathematical formulas. Then, one night, he drew a clean sheet of paper before him, picked up his pen, paused a moment, half frowning, half smiling, and began to write.
A paper on the electrodynamics of moving bodies.
The answer had come. At last he was satisfied. The disorderly questions had been swept away by the slow, steady logic of his mathematical formulas. Now he was ready to tell the world, and in time the article was finished and sent on its way to be published. In 1905, the article came off the presses and into the hands of scientists the world over. But the scientists paid no attention to it. Nobody praised it, nobody blamed it. They just ignored it. Weeks and months went by. Then the word finally came from the leading mathematician of Germany, from the great Max Planck.
Here in Herr Einstein's paper, we have at last a solution to all the problems that have troubled us. Here is the only possible solution set down in perfect mathematical form.
Now a thousand voices rose from all directions. Scientists, teachers, philosophers, reporters.
What does it mean?
But this is contrary to Newton.
Contrary to all scientific knowledge.
Time and space are relative, he says. Does that mean they don't exist?
It's only a theory.
Where's the proof? Certainly we need proof. What can't we do?
The proof was in the formulas. That was Einstein's answer. When the first shock was over, scientists everywhere in physics and chemistry set themselves to work in their laboratories with a new purpose. To see where these ideas of Einstein would lead them. A revolution in science had begun.
But what of Albert Einstein? What was he doing? He was busy working on new problems. By the same sure methods of mathematics, he was devising answers to a new series of questions.
Does light always and everywhere move in a straight line? Or this? Does gravitation exert any force on light?
It was no longer necessary for Albert Einstein to work by day and study by night. Now he was really free to work on his own time, in his own way. Now he could give his whole mind to these new questions. And now again the answers came in the form of another paper published in the year 1915. This time the situation was different. This time the scientists were waiting for it. These were the answers they found in Einstein's new theory.
Light only seems to travel in a straight line here on Earth because our earthly distances are short. A ray of light passing near a large mass, like the sun, is deflected. And such a bending of light rays seems to tell us that our universe is limited in extent.
But other scientists were not entirely satisfied. Do light rays really bend when they pass a large body out in space? That was a question that Professor Eddington of England proposed to test.
Well, the thing can easily be tested. In 1919, there will be an eclipse of the sun. I propose to observe the action of light coming from the companion star of Sirius during this eclipse. Such an observation will prove once and for all if Einstein's formula is true or just so much mathematical fantasy.
And the thing was done. Telescopes were shipped to a tiny island in the Gulf of Guinea, and an expedition of trained astronomers followed to supervise and check the results. As the time of the eclipse came closer, Eddington gave his final orders.
Set the clocks, men.
They're set. Got them ready.
Are you photographers? You better get to your places.
Yes, sir.
Check your sights for altitude. Are you ready?
8 seconds. 7 seconds. 6 seconds.
The sun grew darker.
4 seconds.
Then,
3 seconds.
Close beside it appeared a faint star.
There it is. They do bend. The light rays do bend in passing the sun. It's no longer a theory. It's a proved and tested fact. Einstein is right.
But other astronomers were at work on a mountaintop in California.
And what they discovered there of light from the farthest stars presented another problem.
Now, you've heard of Edwin Hubble and his crew at Mount Wilson Observatory. You know their theory. The universe, it seems, is not limited in extent. It is expanding, planets and galaxies rushing away from us and each other at tremendous rates. Perhaps there is, after all, a flaw somewhere in the flawless formulas of Albert Einstein.
In view of the observations made at Mount Wilson, it would seem that there are things I have not considered carefully. There is nothing sacred in my formulas. All that these discoveries mean is that now, as I approach old age, I have much work to do.
And for a man who had worked so long, so earnestly, and so well, the thought was a happy one. For this man was now a citizen of the United States of America, respected and honored as the greatest scientist of his time. Today, in his study at Princeton University, he can look forward to new discoveries. And backward, too. He can look backward some 40 years to the time when he first wrote down the most famous equation in modern science, E equals MC squared.
If a mass, no matter how small, is traveling at the speed of light, it becomes pure energy. And this energy has no limits.
This was an idea that other scientists could work with. Break the atom apart, they said, and the power it releases will be the greatest that man has ever created. The atom they chose was uranium. And they broke it. On the desert sands of New Mexico in the year 1945, the crucial test was made. The effects were successful and awesome. Using the formula created by a gentle, quiet mathematician named Albert Einstein, mankind had pushed forward into a new age, the age of atomic power.
I've been listening to another program from Great Days in Science, the Indiana School of the Sky Science Series. In the cast were Bruce Chamberlain, John Taylor, R.D. Morgan, Joe Verpalot, Julius Miller, and Gene Thompson. Sound and music by Jack Mickey. The program was written by George C. Johnson and directed by Fred L. Gerber.
Next week, more about the atom with a program called The Atom Yields Power.
Is produced by the Radio Department of Indiana University and reaches you through the cooperation of the Indiana State Department of Education.